Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, Boomer and Geo coming to you live from the Bill Ford Tough Studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. We've been talking about the documentary and the documentarian. There you go. Matt Hamacek, director of Dynasty, the New England Patriots on Apple TV for the last couple of weeks. Boomer had a chance to interview Matt for Game Time and said, man, we got to have Matt in studio. So Matt Hamacek is here. Very fortunate to have him in studio today. Matt, good morning. How are you? Good
morning. How you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're doing great. So obviously this has been a big hit for you and Apple TV Plus. When you released this thing, did you expect it to go over and be as popular as it has been?
Well, okay, look, I mean, anybody who knows the numbers with football knows that 91 out of the top 100 TV programs every single year are NFL-related content, right? Even the draft sometimes outperforms, you know, like NBA finals and things. It's remarkable. So that was always the hope, but obviously, you know, it's exceeded all of our expectations, and it's really been interesting to see the feedback we've been getting.
So the feedback.
Yeah.
The feedback from the Patriot fans.
Oh.
I guess that would be somewhat negative, you think?
I would say so. I know not all of them. I think it's the vocal minority, right? And they're always the loudest and make the most noise on Twitter and social media. But, you know, it's been mixed. It's like some people want to sort of live the fantasy that everything was great and peachy, and then other people want to see what really happened in the unvarnished telling of the New England Patriots story, and that's sort of what we always set out to make.
So how many people did you interview?
About 70 plus players, coaches, front office execs, Goodell, rivals, Strahan obviously was an incredible interview, Mike Martz. So it was all over the place. And it was good for me because I wasn't a fan of the team. I'm a Packers fan. And so I just got to listen to these guys tell their stories and say, you know, what was it really like to be there and sort of take me into the room as this stuff is happening, as the good stuff happens and they create this incredible machine, and also, you know, the part where it all falls apart at the end.
How many hours of interviews did you do?
Well, everybody was about 3 hours a pop. So, and then some people were like 15 hours. So, it ranged. But then in addition to that, 35,000 hours of archival footage, like to give you a visualization, so you could fill up two Mack trucks with the tapes that we had to go through and find these little nuggets in.
So you said you actually did talk, and I know you did because I've seen it, but you did talk with Roger Goodell.
Yeah.
You talked with Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft, and of course Tom Brady. I guess the four most important principals when it comes to kind of putting this whole thing together and trying to wrap your head around all the things that were going on. Do you feel like all four were truthful with their answers to your questions.
Yeah, I think so. I think that they all really got into things in particular that they really hadn't talked about before. And so, you know, there were times when Bill Belichick didn't want to answer certain questions and he would just say, I've already talked about that before. There were also times when Bill would come in and he had a great story about, you know, calling up Randy Moss at a club when they were trying to get him. And Randy thought that somebody was on the other line impersonating Bill Belichick. And we have both of them telling that side of the story. And it's great. And so, like, there's two sides to Bill. But Tom, in particular, I think is more vulnerable in this interview and more revealing in this interview than I've ever seen him before. So it was great to be able to sit across from all of those people.
Talking to Matt Hamacek, he's director of Dynasty on Apple Plus, and it's the New England Patriots story. So getting all these guys to participate can't be easy, especially guys like Roger Goodell and Bill Belichick, who don't love to talk about everything. So those initial conversations and getting them to do the show and the interviews, what were those like?
It's the same as it is on every project. When I did Tiger for HBO back like a couple years ago, we didn't have anybody on the inside, right? So we didn't have Tiger. We didn't have his inner circle. But you talk to people that were, in that case, on the outside sort of looking in, and in this case, all the insiders, and you say the same thing. You know, we're going to tell the unvarnished story, but we're going to be fair. And when they say, well, how am I going to be, you know, portrayed here? And I said, somewhere between the puff piece and the sort of the hit piece. And in between those two extremes is where the truth is of most of us.
Now, your reputation in the business already with the Tiger documentary, Amanda Knox, that stuff, when you go to someone like Roger Goodell, that's got to help with credibility or no?
I don't know about that. I think it's really just talking to people and just saying, you know, look, this is going to be fair. We're going to ask you questions about all sorts of things. And he, you know, he knew that some of the things that I wanted to talk to him about were Spygate and Deflategate. And because he was the one, I wanted to know, like, how he first heard about it. You know, what was his initial reaction to it? And with Deflategate in particular, I think I was most interested in this idea of it being almost farcical in nature. The fact that this thing consumed the nation basically for almost 2 years, over 2 pounds of air pressure, and the reports that were wrong, and then just like the spectacle of it all.
Did you ever find the guys who actually were the equipment guys that were handling the football?
No.
Where are those guys?
I have no idea. But no, you know what? So I found a piece of archive early on. It was from the Today Show, and it was of Matt Lauer, and this is about like a year and a half into the story, and he goes, we lead our story, our news today with the story, the ongoing Deflategate story, and he talks about it for a little bit, and then a couple minutes later he goes, and in other news, 2 hostages have been taken by ISIS. And so it was like, wait.
The 2 equipment guys?
Yeah. So the thing, that was like a light bulb going off moment of just like, okay, this isn't about did he do it or did he not do it? It's about just like how ridiculous this whole thing became.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. You know, and I was thinking, so you have Spygate, which is basically right at the feet of Bill Belichick. Mm. He's the one that's running the Patriots. He's the one that is basically saying we need to see all these videos of these coaches and everything else. Eric Mangini. What happened between the two of them, and why did Eric Mangini decide, in your eyes, to expose all of this?
Well, I mean, that's a question for Eric. I think that what I saw, and what Michael Holley is a great journalist in Boston and gave us a great interview. What he talked about is this idea that everybody says, well, when I get to the top, I'm going to be the guy that doesn't change. You know, when you win 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, or you find any kind of success at that level, that you're not going to change. But as Michael Holley says, you do. And what he talks about with Belichick is hubris and thinking that, you know, you're above the rules. And so the thing that, you know, was interesting about the Spygate thing was that he knew that this guy who had witnessed him, that the Patriots doing these things, had gone to the rival team and knew about this. And here's what was interesting about it. And this is one of the things we didn't cover in the story, was that, you know, it has been reported that in the year prior, in 2006, that the Patriots had caught the Jets doing it to the Patriots at Gillette. And then there were even further rumors that, you know, perhaps, you know, Mangini had even called Belichick the week before they played and said, hey, don't do this to us when we come. Don't do this at the Meadowlands. And then there was this feeling of, you know, Belichick still did it. And so that's where the idea of hubris comes in, a little bit of like, you know, I don't care, I'm going to do what I do. And see, this is the interesting thing about Belichick, right? The origin story of the Patriots is, here's this guy, everybody's saying, stick with Drew, don't go to this new guy named Tom Brady, even when Drew comes back and he's healthy. But Bill is a maverick. That's like his superpower, is that he doesn't listen to what everybody else is saying and he does what he thinks is best. And sometimes, like, our greatest, you know, our greatest gifts are sometimes also our, you know, our weaknesses at times. And so that's, I think, what makes him so fascinating as a character, especially as we get into these later years, is I've had people, you know, in the latest episodes we have is where, you know, players talk about him, you know, biting Brady's head off in front of team meetings.
Yeah, right? I mean, and Brady always would complain to us as broadcasters that you would think that I had never done anything around here with the way that he treats me. But one of the reasons I believe that he was treating Brady that way was to show everybody
send
else
a message.
To send a message, right, 100%. To control the team. You know, it's interesting because the Drew Bledsoe interviews, mm-hmm. you could feel the anger coming from Drew Bledsoe to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, he still feels the sting of what happened to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there were two different times that had to happen, right? One is you signed the contract, you're the $100 million quarterback, which in today's dollars is almost like the equivalent of
Patrick Mahomes
money. Sure. Yeah, exactly. And so at that time, you know, if you went down with injury, it was assumed that you would get your job back. That was the way it was supposed to be. But Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick, and he didn't see it that way. And I think that they had seen signs in training camp that year, in the 2001 training camp, that Tom had something, it was something special, and that he had shown improvements. And so they had the opportunity. He came in, and even when he didn't necessarily perform at his best, I think Belichick said, no, this is the guy we're sticking with. Drew comes back, and you can understand it from Drew's perspective. This is my team.
Oh, I totally understand it because I played the position.
Yeah.
But I also understand another thing that is really important to Bill Belichick, and that is controlling the locker room and getting the most out of every single player. So from my perspective, the Drew Bledsoe aspect was he did all of this stuff with another coach, two other coaches, mm-hmm. in fact, Bill Parcells and then Pete Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
And he was bigger than life. He was the Patriots. He was the face of the Patriots. Now, all of a sudden, Bill Belichick comes in. And, you know, he does not want to deal with a $100 million quarterback.
He wants everybody to be equals.
Exactly.
That's the system that he created and sustained for 20 years, right? So part of it is, I would assume, though Bill doesn't say this on camera, is, you know, you don't have a superstar around anymore. And Adam Vinatieri talks about that in the documentary. He sort of says, we all got to feel like we had ownership because Tom was just Tommy. He wasn't Tom Brady, the GOAT at that time. And so everybody from the offensive line to the running backs to people like Vinatieri, you know, who hadn't had all those kicks that won the Super Bowls and everything at that point in time, they all felt like they sort of owned the team equally now. And so I think that was part of the appeal of going with somebody like Tom, besides the fact that he was incredibly hardworking, his mechanics were good, and he sort of did what, you know, what the scheme said.
Talking to Matt Hamacek, he's the director of The Dynasty, New England Patriots on Apple TV+. Why do you think the Aaron Hernandez story is like the sixth or seventh most talked about thing in New England Patriots history? It's Spygate, Deflategate, Tom Brady, and Drew Bledsoe, and all of this stuff. And then it's like people are like, oh, yeah, that's right. And Aaron Hernandez killed a bunch of people and then killed himself in jail. It's like, why is that so far down the list?
Down the list, I mean, it's obviously something that people still really talk about. And the obvious reason that they would talk about it is because that doesn't happen very often. But within the team, and that's what I think we had in the telling of the story that was unique, because they've made documentaries about Aaron Hernandez before. We've read the headlines and sort of seen the true crime version of this. I'll never forget, I was interviewing Deion Branch, and I work off of a laptop when I'm interviewing so people can communicate with me. And our producer, Vindy Anton, who loves this show and is listening right now, I'm sure, he texted me in the middle of it and said, I think Deion may know Aaron Hernandez. Ask him about it. And so I just said, Deion, tell me about Aaron. And in the episode 6, which is where the Aaron Hernandez story happens, you see Deion Branch and he responds and he just goes, we called him Chico Man. And that was the beginning of that. Like, he changed. Like, I saw Deion Branch's eyes and face and complexion change because we were talking about him being a Super Bowl MVP up until that point. And then what you realize instantly, and this is what really informed how we told the story, is that these guys still to this day care deeply about Aaron Hernandez. They loved him when he was there, and they still haven't really gotten over everything that happened. And so I think that our entire philosophy as we've made this thing was, look, we finally have all these people who are in the rooms. Let's get out of the way and let them tell the stories and not really, you know, put our thumb on the scale of anything and just let people talk. But in that episode in particular, it was extremely important to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, when you talk about Aaron Hernandez, I also got the feeling like they knew that there was something off about him. Like his teammates knew that this was a guy that was off the rails. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was really not much that they could do about stopping him. And, you know, listen, he's from that area. He had all those bad actors around him. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really change. But Bill Belichick decided to take a chance on him.
Yeah, and it had worked in the past, right? They had taken other players who, and like, let's just be clear, all the warning signs that we're talking about here, nobody had any idea that he was going to be capable of what he ended up doing, right? So it's not like anybody saw signs that would make somebody think, oh my gosh, this person's going to murder somebody someday. And I think what I've heard from a lot of people that I've talked to is a lot of the stuff that was going on is not, is stuff that happens in locker rooms from time to time. People say things and they have bravado and stuff like that. You never know what's true and what's not and things like that. There were warning signs, though, but nothing that would let you believe that he was capable of that. And similarly, when the draft was going on, I mean, the stuff that they, you know, had warnings about were things like, you know, he had gotten in a bar fight in college and busted somebody's ears. He had been smoking weed, things like that. I mean, it wasn't stuff that made you think, oh my gosh, this guy's going to murder somebody someday. So I think they thought, as Robert Kraft said, that the Patriot way was going to correct some things and sort of that he was going to be a guy because he was extremely talented. And and basically Gronk and him together in the two tight end sets was sort of unstoppable. So
did you get the sense that Aaron Hernandez had CTE issues that were going on, or he was just a straight up bad guy, or was a combination of both? Like,
I don't know. I'm not the type of person that would even say like that there is a bad guy. I think everybody's really complicated, and you know, I don't think I look at it to people that way. Obviously, when he finally committed suicide in prison, and they did an examination of his brain, they did find that CTE, he had really bad CTE. So yeah, that obviously probably contributed, but there was also, it's, you know, like I said, we're really complicated, so you just don't know what happened in his childhood, and we got into that a little bit and all sorts of stuff. And so it I think a lot of what we were examining here was more about the idea of Football Inc. and the one of the larger questions that I was always trying to answer. Ernie Adams, the director of football research, in our first interview said every team every year wants to go to the Super Bowl, but not every team is willing to do what it takes to get there. And so that question of what does it take to get there is the thing that I was trying to examine. And I don't think it was just the Patriots. I think that throughout Aaron Hernandez's life, his talent made it so that people were willing to overlook some other things. And I think that's just part of the story of Football Inc.
All right. That's Matt Hamacek. He is the director of The Dynasty. It's a documentary on Apple TV Plus. It's great. We can take a break. We'll come back. We'll do Jerry's update, Al, real quick, and then we'll finish with Matt in this hour, okay?
No, I think
we can do Jerry after.
Do Jerry after. Okay, great. Okay, so we'll take a break anyway, and then we'll come back and talk more with Matt. I want to ask you about Robert Kraft and his ties to his quarterbacks and his coach and the triangle of love that developed up there in New England.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Well, we're in Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. We've got Matt Hamacek in studio. He is director of the Dynasty New England Patriots on Apple TV+. The final two episodes, episodes 9 and 10, coming out on Friday. So we have 8 episodes out already on Apple TV+, and it is getting rave reviews. I did want to ask you, though, you know, Bill Simmons is one of these Boston guys, and His criticism was too much Robert Kraft, props up Robert Kraft too much was one of his criticisms. What's your response to that?
I don't see it. I think, the simplest way to describe it is, to me, is the proof's in the pudding, right? So the three biggest things you'd do if you were making, the Robert Kraft puff piece would basically be when Belichick left the Jets, a lot of people thought that he was essentially unhirable. There was some quote in some place that said, another owner said, I wouldn't trust him to run a Burger King restaurant. Kraft sort of said, I'm not going to listen to this, and I'm going to do what I think's best. And he made arguably the greatest, sort of owner decision of all time. So that's number one. I would say the 2011 CBA agreement, that Robert Kraft helped broker while his wife was unfortunately on her deathbed, would be number two. And then getting into sort of all the things that he's done to the league to help make other owners money through the TV negotiations and stuff. Those would be the three things. If you were doing the Robert Kraft puff piece, that's what would be in, and none of those things are in. So that's sort of my response to that that statement.
He is obviously a central figure because, he talked about how he thought of Drew Bledsoe as a son.
Yeah.
Then Tommy became a son, and you got Bill Belichick trying to run a football team and trying to, I would imagine, trying to keep those players from going above the coach.
Not and above anybody.
To the owner.
Above anybody, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. No, I think, one of the things that interested me about Robert was when he started this whole thing, he was a fan first. He was the guy in the bleachers that was thinking, like a lot of us all do when we're in the bleachers, thinking, hey, if I ran this team, I think I could do better, right? And he finally got it. And so he had an attachment to his players, obviously, but I think that they were a good counterbalance to each other. Belichick was the guy who would, walk into the low light sessions and say, I can get the guy from Foxborough High School to throw a better pass than this to Tom Brady. But Kraft was put his arm around these guys and say, I love you, I care about you, you're one of my family, and things like that. So I think that was a really good counterbalance between ownership and coach for a guy like Tom Brady. I think that the other side of that I found really interesting is that Brady and Belichick were good counterbalances for all the guys on the team. So when Belichick was the guy who was always pushing and pushing and pushing, as Danny Amendola says, we worked for Bill, but we played for Tom. And I think a lot of people felt that Tom was the sort of the heart and soul of that team. And I think that was a perfect counterbalance for that culture.
At the end of the day, when you're done with all these interviews, did you have a better perspective as to why Tom Brady would want to leave and try to win a Super Bowl with another team?
Yeah, I think that the part of the story that we're at right now, which is, after Deflategate, after Tom has over and over and over again been doubted and people have sort of written his obituary or tried to write it, like Max Kellerman saying that he has fallen off of a cliff. He's going to be a bum in short order.
Yeah.
All of that stuff. the culture that Belichick created for a very, very long time, it worked really, really well. But at a certain point in time, when you're 40-something years old and you have 5 Super Bowls under your belt, there's a point at which, you start to say, maybe not quite, I don't want to necessarily be part of this as much anymore, right? And I understand that. But I also understand Belichick's unwillingness to change, because why would he? It had kept producing results. And let's say he had, after the Falcons Super Bowl, changed and he started coddling Brady and giving him special privileges and making him into a star. Well, would they have gotten the Rams Super Bowl at the end? I don't know. But I can also understand why that was grating. And eventually, in episode 9, one of the journalists, Tom Curran, talks about how Brady changed after that, and he started to sort of all of his industry and the TB12 stuff and all of those things started.
Well,
to come
he also married a supermodel, for God's sake.
But that had happened in 2008. So that was already had happened for a long, long time.
And plus, he had kids.
Right. This is a 40-something-year-old guy,
yes.
Right? This is not a 20-year-old guy anymore. And he always did these team-friendly deals. He was always taking less money than other quarterbacks were. And all this stuff. And I think that what was interesting in episode 9, which is the one that's about to drop on Friday, episode 9 and 10, is that a lot of that tension was overlooked by a lot of people within the team, the players, because they kept winning, right? That Falcons Super Bowl, they won that year despite some stuff that was going on. And then I think that Eagles Super Bowl, when Malcolm Butler didn't play, then they
did we ever get an answer as to why he didn't play?
I think you're going to get I'll put it this way. We don't have a definitive answer, but Robert Kraft in his interview gives the biggest hint yet as to what he has heard is the reason that Malcolm Butler...
Can I tell you what I heard?
Okay, tell me what you heard.
I heard that Malcolm Butler basically went after one of the assistant coaches.
Mm.
And one of those assistant coaches happened to be Bill Belichick's son.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard every rumor under the sun.
Okay.
Right? I've heard every single thing. I don't think anybody knows except for the people that were involved. And Malcolm to this day says that he doesn't know why. And there's been all sorts of reasons. There's been things that said that he got injured in practice and things like that, or that it was, you know, whatever. The important thing to remember here is he didn't play a single defensive snap, but he did play in the Super Bowl. So all the people that say that it was for, you know, medical reasons or something like that, can't be true.
Because he was on special teams.
He played one snap. And the thing that people have to remember was this wasn't a guy who played, you know, 20% of the snaps during the regular season. He played 98% of the snaps during the regular season. So the decision to not play him on the biggest stage and the biggest game, I think, is worth examining and asking questions about.
It had to be something like he went after a coach, and that is like, you know, breaking a rule that is just, you can't break that rule. What I was told.
No, but that's interesting, though, because, okay, so you look at what happened in this year's Super Bowl, right? With Travis Kelce.
Yes.
So what would have happened on the Patriots if something like that had happened? I'm not saying that you're right that that's what happened. I'm just asking the question. Like, you saw that on the sideline. What would the reaction have been on the Patriots system if something like that had happened?
Yeah, I was the only one that had a reaction at halftime of that game on the NFL Today, because I thought it was just absolutely absurd that Travis Kelce would do that to Andy Reid.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if that was Gronk doing it to Bill Belichick. What would have happened?
I don't think Gronk would have been back in the game. I'm serious.
Really?
I mean, Bill, the whole benching of Malcolm Butler just sort of tells you that something went on there that was a problem enough for him to take out one of his best defensive players in the biggest game of the year.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the players, I think what you see and you hear all these players talk about it was, and Danny Amendola, we show him walking off the field, going into the locker room, and he says, after I put everything on the line for that game, my body, my soul, everything, and to not even get an explanation as to why that didn't happen, he says, I feel like we got cheated, and I don't feel bad saying that. And then afterwards, there's a journalist, Nora Princiati, who at the time was with the Boston Globe but now works for The Ringer. She talks about how it almost felt like there was a mutiny within the locker room after that moment. And I think that was a dividing moment. Now, I say that, but they went on and won another Super Bowl, you know, right afterwards. So it's like, what makes this story so remarkable is that even when all of this stuff was happening, they were still winning Super Bowls. And again, we go back to this question of, well, you know, if you're Belichick, just change things up, you know, like, but he didn't, and they still won another Super Bowl. And I think that's what makes the story so fascinating to me is there's no easy answers here, right?
Right. Did you feel that Bill Belichick was accommodating, or was he stonewalling?
You mean when I was interviewing him?
Yes.
I think that I'll put it to you this way. This is what I think. When he wanted to talk about something, he talked about things. And when he didn't want to talk about something, he didn't talk about anything. So it's as simple as that. I think that, you know, when he talks about going up against Sean McVay in the Super Bowl, he was great. And by the way, that is probably one of the greatest, you know, Steve Young after that Super Bowl, because Sean McVay, you remember that team? That was one of the greatest offenses we'd ever seen.
Yeah, but Sean McVay was also like goo-goo for Gaga when he was, you know, going against Belichick.
I don't think that it was necessarily that Sean McVay got like tripped up by him and was sort of in his aura as much as it was that Bill Belichick was just, you know, he was just two or three steps ahead of him. And so what happened was, basically, the Patriots had played man defense the entire year, but when they were reviewing the tape of the Rams offense, they realized that when they played against zone, they didn't have as much success. And so in 2 weeks, Bill Belichick and the staff got their defense to completely change. They played like 98% man defense, and in 2 weeks, they got them to switch to zone, and it worked.
It's kind of like what Bill Cowher did.
Yeah, Bill Cowher, yep, at the Seattle Super Bowl 40. Matt Hamacek, a couple more minutes with him in studio. He's the director of the Dynasty New England Patriots on Apple TV, plus the final two episodes, 9 and 10, coming out on Friday. I know it's good fodder for sports talk, but one of the topics that I hated that I'd hear up in Boston or national shows is, who was the most responsible for the Dynasty? Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. To me, it's like a BLT, right? Like a BLT isn't a BLT without those three ingredients, and each of them serve a purpose. Did you come out of this saying that one man was more responsible for it than another?
So we just saw him on a TV screen a couple seconds ago, but I asked Scott Pioli about this in episode 10. It's one of my favorite lines in the entire series. I said, so Scott, who is more responsible, Bill or Tom? And he said, it's a disrespectful question. It's a disrespectful question to all of the players that over the years contributed to make this thing great. Everybody put, you know, sacrificed, put their egos behind, all did what it took to get there. And the idea that it would just be a question about Tom or Bill is insulting to basically everybody else who came through the organization. I think that's right. That team won because everybody bought in and everybody gave up everything to get to the final goal.
Is it, you know, I think we're in the middle of another dynasty right now, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. I feel like they do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because their quarterback is incredibly special.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because he's got the right coach, and they seem to have like there's not a love-hate relationship there. This is a loving relationship between player and quarterback. I don't necessarily know I could say that about Bill Belichick. But although Bill Belichick will tell you that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback that
he says
played,
it all the time.
I mean, he does not, walk away from fawning over his quarterback. He just never did it in front of his team, I guess.
Yeah, and I think I think that if you give Bill the benefit of the doubt, what you realize is that he has these principles, which is that it's always about the team. Nobody's ever bigger. So even when you see it in episode 8, after Tom mounts the 28-3 comeback against the Falcons, I think that the question that I asked him was, tell me about how spectacular that was. And his response, it just so true to form. It's like it's just who he is. He just says, well, Tom's performance is a result of all the other people around him, just like everybody else's is. And it's like, this is the greatest comeback in NFL history, if not sports history, right? On the biggest stage possible. And so, like I said, if you give him the benefit of the doubt, he's true to himself. He doesn't change, and that's it. And so, again, it's like, if you want him to be different, then I think you're asking him to not be what made him great.
He's not complicated. He's very simple when you think about the way that he thinks the way a football team should be run.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very complicated when you're sitting down and you're talking to him and you're trying to get him to expand his thoughts, which for some reason he will not do unless you're talking about, like, punting from the 1940s.
Yeah, but I think, but again, it gets back to this thing of, it's in the Spygate episode, that's a moment when Scott Pioli says that he sort of turned inward and sort of distanced himself from everybody around him. And I think then when you go back to his Cleveland days, when Bernie Kosar, he benched Bernie Kosar. So the press asked him, why'd you do that? And he said it was because of a diminishing physical skills and things like that, right? Now, he was telling the truth, and he was probably right when he said that. But I think he got burned big time for being honest with the press. And at a certain point in time, I understand being in that position, just saying, what good does it do me to say anything to anybody, right? I'm just going to go make the decisions that I think are best, and I'll sit here and do my, mandated media appearances and blah, 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 and then why would you say anything?
Yeah, it's a really good point, because Bernie Kosar was a hero to, the Browns fans, and he was a local kid, and everybody loved him, and that was a decision that ultimately cost him his job. One other thing for me, and one final thing for me, was I really felt like when Deflategate hit, Belichick said, go ask Tom.
Yeah.
I have nothing to do with this. Go talk to the quarterback or whatever.
Right.
And I would imagine that put Tom right on, on blast.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Roger Goodell gets involved.
Yeah, well, I mean, Roger was involved, I think, fairly early on, as soon as the accusations were kind of, as soon as the balls, right after the AFC Championship game in 2014. I think one of the things that was important to us is that story is obviously something that people talked about at the time, that, people were saying that Bill threw Tom under the bus. I think the thing that we did when we told it was, we wanted to make sure people understood why he did it, which was, because it was an equipment violation, the assumption was that it was Bill Belichick, right? And so right after the story broke, everybody was saying, well, as Tom Curran says, if this is true, Bill's got to go, and all this kind of stuff. And I think because he had taken so many bullets for Spygate, I think when he got up there, he just was trying to basically say, this one's not on me. And I think if you're Tom Brady, I can imagine a world where you're thinking, man, I really feel like I just got thrown under the bus. And that's a normal human reaction. But I also understand exactly why Bill wanted to say, this one's not on me.
Got any more sports documentaries on tap coming up? What are you delving into next? Do you need a break?
Nothing. I need a break. I need to see my family. I was running around all over the country interviewing all these guys for 2.5 years, so I just need to spend some time with the kids.
You know, I asked you this off the air, but I want to ask you on the air real quick.
Yeah.
A guy like you, documentaries. Mm-hmm. You got all these different streaming services out there. This is obviously on Apple TV Plus. You got Netflix. You got Prime. You got all these different things. How does somebody like you pitch a project, or does the project get pitched to you?
On the last two things I've done, the projects got pitched to me. So I haven't had to go into these the pitch sessions yet. But you know, the in this case, Jeff Benedict, who wrote the book, he was the one who sort of went around to all the different.
He also wrote the book on Tiger.
Exactly. Yes. That's how we met each other. So I think, you know, in this one, he really went all over the place, sort of going to the different streamers and saying, this is going to be a great story. And, you know, do you want to get involved?
Which was more interesting in your eyes, the rise and fall of Tiger Woods or the disintegration of what happened to the dynasty up there in New England?
I mean, you're asking me to pick between kids here. I can't. Look, they're different stories, right? Because in a lot of ways, the one about Tiger is much more about the external world doing something to Tiger, right? I think what made him so fascinating was he was always this blank canvas that everybody around him, his father, the public, the PGA, everybody wanted to paint something onto Tiger and use him and have him be what they wanted him to be, right? And so that's what made that story fascinating. I think this story is an internal story about these people and how they interacted with each other and how they created something that probably will never be created again, and then how that thing fell apart.
Well, Kansas City's pretty close.
Yeah, we'll see. The one thing that they can do that the Patriots obviously never got to do is three-peat. That's what we're going to see.
Matt Hamacek, director of The Dynasty, New England Patriots. Check it out, Apple TV+. Plus, the final two episodes will be available on Friday, episodes 9 and 10. Matt, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's
I appreciate it.
Great to see you again, Matt. Thanks so much.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So we were just talking about the Patriots with Matt Hamacek, but he said he was a Packers fan during the interview. So in one of the breaks, we were talking about Aaron Jones and how the Packers swapped Josh Jacobs and Aaron Jones, and it was just strange, and he, being a Packer fan, was surprised by that and said he thought it was a downgrade. Well, Aaron Jones has signed somewhere, and he is now going to stay in the division. He's going to be a Minnesota Viking.
Well, look at that.
Yeah, that's a nice. I do like that. I like that guy. I think he's always been a good player. So, I just don't. You have so many weapons on that team now. So you've got Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, T.J. Hockenson, and Aaron Jones, and they're really going to go into the season with Sam Darnold as the quarterback.
Well, Zach Wilson's on his way. Don't worry about it.
Well, he's not on the way. But
no, seriously. It was funny because Matt Hamacek did say something. He goes, you know, Aaron Jones was about as important in the Cowboy playoff game as any player on the team because of his blocking prowess and pass protection.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I tell you, imagine if Sam Darnold goes and has a comeback player of the year because he's playing indoors, got all those weapons. Now I'm starting to buy in.
Like, you just can't help yourself.
Nah, I don't know. I like the Aaron Jones signing. They need to draft a quarterback. They have to.
You bring in Zach Wilson.
Oh, God, I can't even talk seriously with you about this.
Maybe Zach Wilson will go to Denver. Sean Payton. Sean Payton will be up in his grill like you can't believe.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's his speed out there, right?
But maybe that's what he needs.
Utah, Colorado, same type of thing, right? As opposed to like the baby powder on the ass that Rob Saleh gave him for 4 years.
Yeah.
3 years, whatever it's been.
Needs a
chewing out.
Yeah, maybe.
Man. Yeah, interesting.
Or maybe he goes to San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, listen, everybody that plays quarterback in San Francisco finds a way to be pretty good. Ben in Albany, what's going on, Ben?
Hi, guys.
What's up, man?
Thank you for your informative, friendly, and great show you guys have in the morning.
Oh, thanks, Ben. What do you got for us today?
Been a Dallas fan since the late 60s, so I sort of walk around like I'm stammering, wondering when it's going to all happen for us, which I think is never. Anyways, just thinking about these quarterbacks, Prescott and Cousins will make close to $1 billion. One has one playoff victory. The other one has two. I'm just trying to think about how the league got there.
Yeah, I mean,
there after I left.
Yeah,
I mean, the thing is,
you're a lot better than both of them.
Right, but I will say this. Look, both of them bring, they're the heartbeats of their teams. And their players believe in them. In other words, when they step on the field, they realize that they're going to have a chance to win every single game. And they are the name on the marquee, I'm sorry. And when you look at their winning record as starting quarterbacks, it's pretty impressive. And the numbers that they put up are really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, and this is what's so tough, because there's only one team that wins it every year. There's only one Tom Brady, one Patrick Mahomes at a time. Sometimes it's Brady and Manning. There's guys that just are better and can win playoff games and have the right coach and all of those things. But there's also teams that go round and around, like the Cleveland Browns and the New York Jets. They've never had guys like Dak Prescott or Kirk Cousins, like, ever. You know, where guys were putting up those numbers and going to Pro Bowls and leading the league in touchdowns and yards and all of that stuff. So, you know, it's just, it's who you're comparing it to. I mean, you're comparing Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins to Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. Yeah, they fall short. They don't win enough playoff games. But are you comparing them to, you know, what you see the worst teams in football go through at the quarterback position? Then, yeah, you want to pay those guys top dollar because they're giving you a chance every single year to compete and win your division.
And by the way, neither one of them was a first-round draft pick. And both of them had a bet on themselves.
Yeah.
And both of them have had to come off of injuries in order to bet on themselves and get their contracts.
Yeah.
So, these contracts, we all may feel like are inflated for whatever reasons, but they are the heartbeat of their football teams. And when you don't have one, you realize just how valuable they are. Just take a look at the Falcons. You know, when Matt Ryan was playing at the top of his game, taking the team to the Super Bowl, winning an MVP, you know, there was smooth sailing. They could sell season tickets. People were into it. Everybody was, you know, a Falcon fan. The Dirty Bird was being done, you know, all when they were having their success. Now, all of a sudden, the last couple of years, Marcus Mariota, Desmond Ridder, I mean, you know, come on. Nobody wants to see those guys play. So that's why they went all in on Kirk Cousins. And they also realize that they have a young team and that that young team needs direction. And that's what they're hoping and that's what they're paying Kirk Cousins for.
Yeah, so Amon Green, former Packer running back, just said on his radio show that Aaron Jones is dead to him. He went to the Vikings, so this thing just keeps going.
It's terrible.
They're taking the playbook right from WFAN here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's really incredible.
Yeah, but you know, the amazing thing is that, you know, Aaron Jones probably is reacting to the signing of Josh Jacobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it like the Giants signed DeAndre Swift?
He only got 1 year, $7 million, too. I mean, I know he's 29 years old.
And by the way, Josh Jacobs' contract, if you look at it, it's a one-year deal with three options attached to it.
Okay.
And I think he's going to make about $14.7 million this year, Josh Jacobs. And then if the Packers don't want him, they can cut him without any dead money and any of that other crap.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.